My paternal grandparents were Russian, immigrating to North America prior to the 1917 revolution. My grandmother brought with her the oral history of her life as a village peasant. The most memorable story was of her five-year-old brother. A group of men, sometimes my grandmother called them Cossacks and sometimes Tatars, thundered through their village on horseback one day, and my grandmother watched helplessly as her little brother was swept away and never seen again.
The story which inspired the novel, The Lost Souls of Angel Kov. Linda Holman is joining us on the book club right now, and she's the author of the international best-selling historical novels, The Lynette Bird, The Moonlit Cage, In a Far Country, and The Saffron Gate, as well as eight other works of fiction and short fiction as well. Linda, it's a pleasure to have you join us on the book club.
Oh, thanks, Justine. It's good to be here.
We're talking about historical fiction today, so it's a perfect day to have you on and talk about your novel, The Lost Souls of Angel Kov. It's a story revolving around revenge, deception, love, redemption, and it's set against the turbulent social upheavals of 1860s Russia. So we know that the story was inspired by your background and your family. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about the story and what inspired it?
Oh, okay. Well, my father's side of the family is my grandparents, paternal grandparents were from Russia. And while I was growing up, my grandfather had passed away, but my grandmother lived with us while I was young. And she shared all her stories with me. We spent a lot of time together, and I was fascinated by things she had to tell me. She spoke Russian with me at night. We didn't speak it in the day, but she and I did at night. And I have since lost that, unfortunately, because I was young. But she told me that story in particular about her brother being stolen, which was kind of horrifying and fascinating, of course, to a child. I couldn't imagine it. That story stuck with me always, and even though I questioned her further about it, she really was rather disinterested. It happened when she was 10 and her brother was 5. It was so long ago for her that it was just one of the many stories in her life, and she'd undergone so many things. But that, as I say, was just one of them. Another story that comes out in the book in another form is of my grandfather, who was in the army in Russia, and after about a week decided he didn't like it, and there was nowhere to go, but he decided he would leave, and he walked away, and he walked all the way to Paris.
Oh my
because
gosh.
That's the only place he knew where to go, because he had one aunt that lived there. So he just kind of set off and walked from St. Petersburg to Paris and never went back. That's he emigrated to the United States after that. But there is a part of the novel where a young man walks across Siberia, and that was inspired by that part of my family history.
What a rich history.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was very fascinating to grow up with that surrounding me. Mm-hmm.
Did her family ever try to, I guess, I don't know how they would, but try to locate the brother? You know, were there failed attempts? Was there ever, you know, any chance of him actually being nearby? Did they hear anything?
No. You know, the funny, and this is what I mean about my grandmother being strangely, you know, it just happened. They were very poor. They were peasants. They lived in a little village. You know, like, for instance, in my grandmother's family, 12 children were born and 4 survived infancy, and she was one of the 4. And so all she really remembers that the men were wearing uniforms, and they came through, and I think they were snatching boys to kind of induct little boys. It reminds me a little bit of what's, you know, with the child soldiers in Africa today, just kind of stealing children to raise up to be soldiers. That's all. It's all she really knew about it. And what would have been done in a little village? You know, she didn't seem to have any answers. I'm sure there was some kind of search for any children who were missing, but how far could they have gone, you know, so early in the century, you know, at that point?
With that amount of money and just living in a small town, you just, the helplessness that you must feel.
Yes, and that's what it was, yeah.
Who's going to help me? You know, even though it's one of the most precious things in the world to you, you're, you know, a child, to other people, it might just not matter.
And also life was just, life just came and went. As I said, there were 12 children born in my grandmother's family, and, you know, only 4 survived. And that's just the way it was in living in poverty and living in that era. So it wasn't, as tragic as it was, they seemed to, I don't know if saying accept is the right word. No one ever accepts those kinds of
practices. They knew how to deal with loss because it was around them a lot more, maybe.
Yeah, I guess so. But as I say, my grandmother really, she had been a child at the time herself. And when she told me she was, you know, older and her life had changed so drastically, it was, as I've said, it was just one of the many stories of that she had in her repertoire.
So these stories being passed on from generations, these are some of the stories that inspired your novel. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about the Lost Souls of Angelkov and the main characters?
This book is different than my former historic novels, the four that you mentioned earlier, because in those earlier novels, my protagonist was usually a woman at the bottom of the social strata, and she's struggling to survive and find a way to exist in a world, in worlds that are difficult for women in those, in whatever country and time I was writing about. Antonina in this novel is actually born into a noble family, and she is a nobleman's daughter and then becomes a nobleman's wife. She lives in luxury. So her world is very different than the worlds I have written about. She lives at a time of turbulence. So when the story opens, it is 1861, and that is the serf emancipation. And at that point, 80% of all people in Russia were serfs, and they were working under these noblemen and royalty. And when they were freed, they had nowhere to go. You can liken it to what happened after the Civil War when slaves were freed. Their lives really couldn't change because they had no money and no place to go. Couldn't change. Of course, they were free. I'm not trying to say that that wasn't a wonderful thing. But with these serfs, they still had to stay on the land that they had been living on, and they really had nothing more.
They had no other means to get by.
No, it was a time of great social turbulence and unrest when the social roles were changing. Suddenly, they were free men and women and trying to figure out how to live in this free world. And so there was a lot of unrest, a lot of there were uprisings and all kinds of things. So that's when the story takes place, and the story opens with a kidnapping of a child, and it is directly related to this unrest that's in the country. So it is the story of a woman of means, but of great sadness. And she looks, she has an addiction, and she looks for ways to get her through this, the kidnapping of her son. That is the main plot line, but there are many other weaves that come in and out. And but that's what carries through the novel. Will she find her son? What has happened to him? And how will she survive in this new era?
There are multiple plot lines to this story that are kind of woven together. Like you mentioned, that was the main one, but there are other ones as well. And I love it when a novel has different plot lines, and it can do it properly because it adds a lot of depth and complexity to the story. How do you do this as a novelist? When I'm reading it, it's seamless to me. It's like a quilt that's all put together and it's beautifully done. But when you're putting it together and you're the one kind of writing this, does it get confusing? Do you write them separately and then weave them together later? I've always kind of wondered how someone goes about writing different plot lines that interweave together.
You know, every book that I write is slightly different in the sense that I'm never sure when I'm starting who exactly is going to be coming in to the novel, sometimes out. But the other difference in this novel is that it's written in third person, and normally I love writing in first person, and I tend to do that. I have done that in the past historic novels, and the reason I do it is I feel first person is very powerful, and the immediacy of the I, you know, I this and I of the first person. Mm-hmm. But the problem with this novel was because of these different plot lines of actually three other characters, I simply could not tell it from Antonina's point of view, because the problem with writing a first person is that all the experiences are filtered through that one character. So she could not go into the lives of the other characters and have seen them. So I had to do it in third person, and actually was a good experience, and I did enjoy it. But I kind of just wove in and out, and actually it took me a long time to figure out how to do that weaving. Thank you for saying that you felt it was seamless.
It's appreciated. It is.
It takes a lot of moving around and changing and switching from, you know, present tense to past tense. And there is really no way for me to describe it, because it happens kind of organically as I'm working. I feel it, and it's a bit, it comes by instinct. And not to say I don't need really good editing, and I thank Ann Collins, my editor at Random House, for working through that with me to make it clearer, because, of course, as the author, you often don't see when things are not clear, because you know what's going on in your head, and you assume you're writing it down in the best way you can, but sometimes it needs some nudging by someone else who's looking at it with fresh eyes.
For sure.
So I'm not sure if I've answered your question.
Yeah.
It's just that there's many layers, and they have to be worked in, and it takes a lot of writing and rewriting and rewriting. So
yeah, absolutely. When you sit down, when you say, I'm going to write today, or maybe you do every day, do you sometimes know where it's going to go, or does it end up changing and taking a different turn than you expected?
Yeah, actually, yes and no, or yes to both, I guess is what I should say. Yes, when I sit down each day, and when I'm in the thick of it, I do try to write every single day so as not to lose the momentum, although, of course, there are days where it just, you know, life intrudes and I can't. But I do have to write on a really strict schedule. So I sit down every day with the knowledge of where I'm going to jump in, because I've usually, and this is kind of a writerly trick, you try to leave off the day before where you still have something to explore, meaning you know where you're going with the scene, but maybe not to completely finish out that scene, so that when you sit down the next day, you have a jumping off point, which I find really works well for me. So I sit down, and so yes to the first question, I sit down thinking I know where I'm going to go, and I start there, but yes to the second question, it goes somewhere else usually from that spot. It doesn't matter how many outlines I do, how many plot summaries, how many characters, sketches I do for myself, things change, and I really can't predict. I do follow a really rough idea and a rough kind of synopsis, or, well, a rough outline, but, you know, I can never count on it, because the thing that's most glorious to me about writing is when I think I know what a character is going to do, and then they do something completely different, and they take the story in another direction. They take their character in another direction. So that is just coming out as I'm actually typing. So it happens in ways that are mysterious and wonderful, and sometimes extremely frustrating, because something that a character I thought was going to act and in a certain way and take the story in one direction, suddenly, as I'm typing, I'm reading in surprise or horror that they're doing something I didn't expect. And that's just coming out from my fingertips. And so I try to follow it. And there's lots of, you know, things that I find that I'm surprised in a good way, and things that are dismaying because I'm going to have to change other parts of the novel after this has happened. So,
Linda, we're just going to take a short break here. We're speaking right now with Linda Holman. She's the author of The Lost Souls of Angel Cove. You're listening to The Book Club on CJOB 68. Welcome back to The Book Club on CJOB 68. I'm Justine Ruche, and we're sitting down and speaking with Linda Holman. She's the author of The Lost Souls of Angel Cove, and we're talking about historical fiction today. What about your schedule? I know that you go into it with a bit of an idea of where you want to go with your writing, and you said you have some plot ideas, but do you force yourself to write a certain amount every day, or what's it like for you? When you say strict, what does that mean?
Strict, I think, means that I'm just really disciplined, and that no matter what I feel like doing, I write. Just because I don't feel I have the luxury to not do that in the sense of contracts and having to have a book at a publisher's, you know, at a publishing house by a certain date. So because, there are times, of course, when I'm not writing because I'm traveling for research or just living my life. And so when I am in my home in Toronto or in Santa Monica, in California, where I live part-time, I am working and I have this, you know, time that I know I have to write. I basically get up every morning and I go to my desk. And I do sometimes I say, I do keep track of word count every day. I don't know, that's just a little bit obsessive about me. But it does make me feel better that I know that I have at least so many words done per day. That doesn't mean that I you know, can't leave the desk without having written so many. But if I haven't written a certain amount, at least the time has been spent on research or something like that. But when I'm really on a roll and really, meaning on a roll with a book, meaning I'm just going forward every single day, I do try to actually write between 1,500 and 2,000 words a day, mm-hmm. if at all possible. And yeah, that makes me feel better. And even if it's a shorter writing day, but I feel I've accomplished that, I don't feel quite as much guilt if I leave my desk. And then there are the days, of course, where I feel like I worked, you know, far too long and haven't accomplished that because I've gotten caught up on some bit of research mm-hmm. that has made me change the way I'm the direction that day. So, yeah. Pretty much I do sit down every day and I do write a certain amount.
It's got to be encouraging to look back and see how many words you've written. I know there's some days there's obviously a lot more than others, but mm-hmm. Kind of like a little pat on the back. You talked about research and the kind of research that goes into a historical novel is obviously going to be very different than just, let's say, a piece of regular fiction that's, you know, set in present day in Winnipeg or in Toronto, that kind of thing. What kind of research goes into your novels and specifically The Lost Souls of Angel Cobb? Did you mm-hmm. did you travel to Russia? I know that some of it is just inspired by your grandmother's story, her life. But do you go through any journals or what do you have to do for that?
Mm-hmm. For every historic novel, it's that I write, it's a huge amount of work. And I would say that the research takes as long as the actual writing, because basically every single page has to be, everything is written has to be researched, whether it's from the weather to the clothes they wore to what they're eating to their, you know, how they move about their lives. So it's really, really carefully detailed and researched. And yes, I did. I went to Russia in 2007. I was not working on this book, but in the back of my mind, I was thinking that I would like to write this novel, and so I did get a chance to go to Russia and traveled around in Russia. And then when I did start this novel, which I started in, I think it was the beginning of 2010, I did the Trans-Siberian. I started in Beijing in China on a train and went through Mongolia and then hit the border of Siberia. I did not go completely across from Vladivostok, where if you go completely from east to west across Russia, I came up from Mongolia into Siberia and spent a couple of weeks traveling on the train and also in homestays throughout Siberia, meaning, well, I really didn't have a choice because the little places that I stopped did not have hotels. Mm-hmm. And so I was with actually one of my adult daughter, and we stayed with people, Siberian people who couldn't speak English, and they gave us, a couch or some place, and they gave us meals, and we went out and explored and would get back on the train every couple of days and went across Siberia that way, and then, which was great for my character who was walking across Siberia, and then crossed into Western Russia, crossed the border, and went into to Moscow and St. Petersburg. So, yes, I spent about a month on that trek and was just researching madly and with great joy. And even being on the train was the Trans-Siberian, these old Russian trains, I'll tell you, that was an experience in itself. And the Russian people that we met on the trains while we were doing that, it was really quite amazing. And so I felt that when I came home, I was so filled with images and with sounds and with tastes and smells. It was really an amazing experience. And I do try to go to the country of the book I'm working on. It makes a real difference. Other than that, I just read everything possible. I order books from, you know, out of print books, and I order everything I can or get a hold of everything I can. And I just, I'm completely immersed. And I read fiction of the era for things like language and just the way, you know, people speak and move and things like that. And mm-hmm. and then I read all the nonfiction I can for all the facts. And that's what I immerse myself in completely.
Speaking with Linda Holman, she is the author of The Lost Souls of Angel Cobb. And we're talking about historical fiction today on the book club. We're going to take a short break and be right back. If you want to find out how to meet Linda and get your hands on a copy of this book, you're going to want to stay listening to the book club on CJOB. You're listening to The Book Club on CJOB 68. We're joined with author Linda Holman, and we're talking about her book, The Lost Souls of Angel Cove. And it's historical fiction that's written based on, inspired, rather, I should say, on her family's history, and a lot more as well, based in the 1860s in Russia. Linda, you're in Toronto right now, and you're going to be in Winnipeg very, very shortly, so everyone can kind of go down and listen to you read and check out this book, and me too as well. So this is this coming up Tuesday, July 24th, you're going to be at McNally Robinson at Grant Park.
That's right. 8 o'clock is the launch of the book and my reading, and I'll be there to sign books afterwards. I'd love to see anyone come down there. It'd be great.
We'll have to speak again and hope to see you on Tuesday at McNally Robinson.
Thank you so much, Justine. Thank you for the opportunity and the great questions.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Book Club on CJOB 68 every Sunday at 10. We'll be back next week and see you then.